For as long as I can remember, I've found myself searching. Searching for meaning, for understanding, and trying to find the true essence of who I am. To make sense of all of the knowledge that's out there, and how I could use that to be the best version of myself. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, and professionally. Through my own experiences and conversations with inspiring people sharing their authentic stories, I've realized that the answers to some of life's most challenging problems often lie in very simple messages. So join me on a journey of discovery where I speak to real people with real stories sharing real insights. I'm Sanjeev, and you're listening to my podcast series, Just Another Lens. Welcome to this episode of Just Another Lens, where I have my guest, Dr. Khushbu Patel, a chiropractic doctor, otherwise known as the chiropractic alchemist. I assure the listeners this is intriguing as it sounds. And what we hope to do today is uncover the secrets of chiropractic interventions. And bust some myths, and hopefully get inside your mind, Khushbu, as to how you approach this and how it can benefit people, whether they're young or old, because it's been a journey for me to understand and discover that over the last few months with you, and I just really wanted to share that with everybody out there.
Yeah, perfect.
Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay. So, Khushbu, I always tend to do this, that I think as much as what people do, and where they are in life, how they got there is really, really interesting for me.
Yeah.
And people who have sort of sent us messages and dialed in have said the same. So let me take you back to your sort of formative years. You're not from the UK, are you?
No.
So tell us about your early years. Where were you and what was that like?
So I was born in New Zealand, raised in Fiji for about 8 years of my life, and then moved back to New Zealand. Had the best childhood you could possibly imagine. Like island life, really chilled out, no stresses. And I had all my family with me. And so they were really the best years of my life. And then I think from there it was, went back to New Zealand, studied like high school, all of that. University, then went to Australia to work, and then finally came to the UK. So been a few places beforehand.
Okay, let's just draw that right back.
Yeah.
This is what most people do, honestly.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's get to the stage where I've graduated. No.
Fine.
So in that home environment,
yeah.
Tell me what the dynamics were, who are the influential people in your life, and where did you fit into that world? What was your character that you played and you felt you played?
Well, my childhood name was Nini.
Okay.
And so I was a bit of a stereotype to a Nini. And I don't know if that even makes sense, but I was the daddy's girl.
Okay.
I was the princess and not spoilt, but really, really loved. Like I had a lot of love growing up. And I was brought up in an extended family. So had my great grandparents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, you name it, like cousins and all sorts. And so I just felt like I just had so much attention and so much love throughout my formative years, which I think is just so important for everyone to be able to experience. So I was fortunate enough to have that.
And do you have a sibling?
Yes, I've got my older brother. And again, like I think with siblings, there's always like a bit of a tiff, this, that and the other. But again, with my brother, just so much love. He always was very protective of me, but in like a nice way. He also used to not be embarrassed of me, which was quite nice as well. Because like in high school, I'd just go up to him at lunchtime and be like, oh, I need some money for the canteen. And he'd like happily give me so much money and I didn't know where he got it from. But he would give me money and my friends would be like, oh my God, your brother's so cool. And like, I'd be like, yeah, I know, that's my brother. So I was obviously very proud of him And I felt like he was the same with me as well. So there was a lot of love, still is, but yeah, just very fortunate to have that.
I mean, look, it sounds like an idyllic childhood.
Yeah.
But from when I was young, something you said kind of got me thinking. How you said you were known as, you had a pet named Nini.
Yeah.
And then you played that part.
Yes, so definitely.
Why am I reflecting on that? Because in my childhood upbringing, I had a lovely elder brother who went on and became a doctor. We call him Mad Doc. He calls himself Mad Doc, actually.
Yeah.
The most funny guy I know, but incredibly insightful and intelligent. But I realize now in the rearview mirror, I was playing a role. In other words, as much as I had love around me, there was a level of conditioning which I wasn't aware of then.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I had the same thing.
Yeah, so you start to then, I look back at my tape and I go, so I would play the innocent younger brother.
Mm.
I would play the dutiful this.
Yeah.
I looked up to him incredibly. I'm sure in the same way. It's all genuine, but
yeah.
I probably then played that role too much for too long, yeah, I think. Yeah. How does that sound for you?
Yeah, it definitely rings a bell because for me, Nini was basically, no one took her seriously. Like, you didn't have to worry too much about her. She was fun-loving. Everything was great. It was just, you know, everything was just a little bit of a joke type of a thing. Nothing too serious in life. And so I didn't take life too seriously either growing up. And I think, like, a classic example would be, my mom would be like, oh, you know, I'll try to teach you how to do this or this. And I'll be like, oh, no, it's fine. It's okay. I'll learn it later on. And I'll just go off, do my own thing. And I would, you know, climb the roof of our house and go to our neighbor's place, play with them for ages and come back whenever I wanted to, type of thing. And even like when I was in Australia, I was living with my aunt. And even at her home, I was a grown-up adult and had graduated, was working, but I was still Nini. Like, nothing was too serious. She'd be cooking and I'd be blasting up Bollywood music and dancing around her and just making life really fun. Like, that was just how I lived life. So, yeah.
Look, I you know, part of me wants to go, I wish I had that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really nice.
It is. But, you know, in again, relating to me, as I said, part of me says, maybe I played this role too long.
Yeah.
Or, so there was no expectation on you. And funnily, there was no expectation on me, but there was too much.
Yeah.
So for me, nobody cared. You know, they worried about me.
Mm.
But for me, it was because he'll always figure it.
Yeah.
It was that expectation.
Yeah.
So for me, it worked against me because the pressure just built and built and built and built.
Mm.
And I couldn't reach out for help. It sounds like for you, it's the opposite.
It was opposite, complete opposite. There was no pressure. And so there was no drive. And there was no direction as such, and so it was all kind of my own onus to do whatever I wanted to. And again, because there was no drive, there was no direction, I kind of stumbled into whatever I wanted to do and then had to think back and say, oh, this wasn't really the right path for me, until later on I found the right path in terms of chiropractic.
So again, there's something valuable in that.
Mm.
That as much as we can talk about it being perhaps too free, for want of a different phrase.
Yeah.
Actually, that level of freedom that allowed you to then figure it out and without the pressure, then probably allowed you to get into, you know, this amazing journey you're on now.
Yeah, and also something I'm really passionate about, which I think is another thing that I'm really grateful for, because a lot of people go into jobs that they think is the right thing to do, or, you know, I should do this because this will get me X amount of money, or whatever it is, whatever the reasoning is. I was doing it because I was like, this is really what I want to be. And so I think that was, I guess, the silver lining in the whole Nini stereotype, that I was allowed and I was given that kind of freedom to look into my journey. And it was at a later stage as well, which a lot of people will be like, it took you a degree and then to do another degree to figure it out. But I'm still very, very glad and grateful that that was the way that the journey unfolded.
You know, again, the freedom to go, okay, I did this.
Mm.
But I often say, so what's the race? You don't have to get life right at any particular age.
No, of course not.
You don't have to set your course and go, I'm stuck with this forever, whether I like it or loathe it.
Yeah.
And so many people find themselves in that position. And, you know, for me, I've had to put up with doing something that I didn't enjoy for a long time and then eventually broke free. I thought, now I can just be me and find ways of channeling just me into a way that gives meaning and purpose. And that's how I got into coaching and mentoring. Mm. So Dr. Khushbu Patel, chiropractic doctor, was there a moment when you decided this is what's for me and this is what it means to me?
Yeah, I think it was a moment brought on by my Masi, my aunt. She's a great thinker. I guess that's the best way to put it. And she got me on a phone call one day and she said, oh, I was studying pharmacology beforehand, absolutely hated it and wasn't doing well at it as well because I just didn't care to learn it well. And so she called me and she goes, oh, you know, Beta, you're doing this degree and what's your plans? And I was like, oh, you know, I'll do it and then I'll get a job and, you know, just what people do type of a thing. And she goes, but, you know, my thinking is, and she said it really nicely because she didn't want to be as straight up about it, but the whole point was, this is not how you live your life. You know, it just doesn't go with your ethos and how you live your life. You're a very healthy individual that does everything on a preventative type of measure. And all of a sudden you're going into a profession where you're in a reactive type of environment where you need this medication for this purpose, blah, 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 blah. And she goes, and you're not even one to take like a paracetamol or anything like that, even if you're struggling for a little bit. And I was like, yeah, what's the point of this conversation? And she, you know, she just kind of put the seed in there to be like, you know, just have a think about it. And that bugged me for quite some time. I mean, it wasn't too long before I actually did something about it. I was just like, oh God, I have to actually really do something about it because I'm going into a career for the rest of my life and I already don't like what I'm doing. Like, it's a long life to live. And so I ended up just looking up on Google. I'm not even going to lie. I looked up on Google all the different types of health professionals and, you know, what their career is like, etc. And I called up New Zealand College of Chiropractic. That's where I studied. And I asked the receptionist there, I said, so what is a chiropractor? I had no idea. And she goes to me, well, this is what it is. And I was like, so what do they do exactly? And I can't even remember what she said, but she put it so simply. She's not even a chiropractor herself. She put it so simply that I was like, this is what I want to do. And I realized that, you know, when you grow up and you're playing doctor or whatever it is that you're playing and pretending and imagining that you're going to be when you grow up, I used to pretend to be a healthcare individual, but I never was giving medication in my play. It was always advising people about their health.
Wow.
And then obviously the chiropractic part was missing because I had no idea what it was. But that was when that moment occurred for me and I was like, okay, this is great. And when I went into it, I just signed up, did an interview, and they said, yep, we'd love to have you on board. And my dad was like, do you want to finish your degree and maybe get a job first before you go into another degree? And I was like, no, I'm not wasting my time anymore. I know what I want to do and this is what I'm going to do. First time I ever defied my dad. And he has never been so proud of me for defying him as well because he's seen how passionate I am about what I do. So
was he proud of you in the moment?
No, he wasn't at the moment. He was really trying to be like, oh, okay, let's just kind of think about this a little bit more. And I was just like, nope, this is it.
Yeah, no, he sounds like a wonderful dad in terms of how he handled that, because being a dad myself, when your kids look to make choices, you think,
drastic choices.
Sure about this? Yeah. Are you sure? And try not to blow your fuse and go, this is going to be a waste of money and time. You don't want to say that. You don't want to say that. That's not helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's beautiful because the stars and the dots came together and the light bulb went on and that was it.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like, right? Yeah. So you started that journey of study.
Mm.
Something you mentioned before we go there. You mentioned your aunt said, you've never been somebody who's taken medicine.
Yeah.
You've been somebody who's dealt with preventative therapies. Or what's that about? Tell me about that. I don't understand what that means. So what were you like and what did you do?
I don't actually know. Like, I think it was just something that inherently was, you know, passed on to be maybe by my parents and just the elders in the family. Like, no one, you know, gave into medication unnecessarily. Like, there's always a time and a place for it, of course, but it was always like, okay, well, you've got a headache. Have you drunk enough water? Have you had food? Why don't you go have a rest? Instead of pop a pill, it'll go away and you carry on. So it was very much like, listen to your body and what is it telling you? And I think, again, like, I grew up loving salads. Like, I would eat salad for a meal and like not eat the main meal. And my mum used to worry and she'd be like, she's not growing. And like, you know, she'd take me to the doctor and be like, should we do some kind of test? You know, she's not growing. And the doctor would be like, you know, have you seen your size? You're tiny. Your daughter is genetically going to be tiny as well. And so I remember those kind of messages in my mind were kind of obviously programming to realize that I was doing the right things and it's okay for you to be you and you for you to have that journey of understanding your body and what works for you, because at the end of the day, everyone's bodies are different. So I don't have to be a certain height and a weight for me to be normal. And so, yeah, I think that was kind of subliminally passed on to me with just the way I grew up with my parents.
I love that you're always being you. You know, and so much of social media nowadays is about the ideal, pushing this message of ideal body, ideal look, ideal complexion, ideal this. And we know it's all about filters and, you know, people starving themselves forever to look a certain way, even if that's what they look like. And then once they become normal in their habits again, their body becomes normal back in my view, right?
Yeah.
So chasing a false image is so destructive for so many people. And for me, a young woman like you who shared that, this is who I am. I'm quite happy with this.
Yeah.
You don't have to be 6 foot
no.
X or whatever and whatever the catwalks portray. But yeah, love it. So you were eating healthily. Just let's say, credit your parents with that. I'd say they got damn lucky because getting my kids to eat salads when they're young. But anyway. But yeah, healthy eating, healthy lifestyle, not going to fix the symptom, but going back to, hey, let's figure out the basics of, let's rule the basics out in terms of your lifestyle and your sleeping and hydration, which are still messages today.
Yeah.
And people ignore those very simple messages, right?
Oh God, it's worse today, I feel, unfortunately, with our lifestyles, but yeah.
So now that takes me on to your philosophy of chiropractic, because for me, before I met you, in a professional sense, although I've known you for years. For me, it's like going to a chiropractor whenever I had it. So, you know, my wife, my son used to get migraines. I've always been fit and healthy. Don't need a chiropractor. And they'd go and do some adjustment. Sure. And I'd watch them do this crazy stuff with their head and click. We've seen it all over YouTube, right? Okay. But then, through my head, kind of been through a few illnesses, and I thought, okay. I remember coming to you with a pain here that I just couldn't get rid of. I don't know how the heck I got it. And this little petite person in front of me, okay, ask me a few questions, which, okay, yeah, I just answered. Tapped my this, tapped my that, and I went, okay, just wait here. And then she pulled and she did something that I can't believe this frame can do.
Possibly do.
So much strength. And like it fixed it. And I tried everything. I tried these compression bands and everything you can imagine, painkillers to hide it. I thought, okay, there's something to this. It's more than just this, right? So every time, then it's just the one person to go to is Kushbu. So, but chiropractic's much more than that, clicking bones and stuff. So yeah. What's your philosophy? As I said, you're the chiropractic alchemist. So.
There is already a chiropractic philosophy, and the philosophy is that you're trying to optimize the function of your nervous system. That's just the simple way of putting it. And when you look at it that way, it sounds great, but in actual practice of how we do what we do, it's so much more complicated than that, because every individual is different. You've got through different experiences in your life. Your wife would have, your kids would have, even though you lived in the same household, the stresses that you take on in your life are going to shape the way your nervous system reacts. And so that reaction is kind of like an all-encompassing body, basically. So all these reactions that we have, all the inputs that we get put into our body or our frame, everything reacts, and it reacts because our nervous system is designed to pick up on everything that's going on around us. It does it so silently that you don't realize, and things build up, and then when it's had too much, it starts to show you symptoms. But that's basically the philosophy about how each individual can experience chiropractic in such a different way. So you could have come in for, let's just say, low back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have adjusted your whole spine, because we don't just focus on your low back. We adjust the person, the body, and your whole spine and your whole body, because your toe could be interfering with something here, and this could be interfering with something there.
My toe.
Yeah. And so your glutes could be weak, and that's causing your shoulder to overwork on the other side. Compensation patterns occur. Our body is brilliant. Okay. I think it's so underrated in terms of the amount of functions that our body has. And in kind of like a hierarchy of what's really important, our nervous system controls everything. So it's pretty damn important that we take care of it. But people don't realize that there's a route to be able to take care of it, and also there's an importance behind it. So yeah, basically the philosophy with how I work and what I do when I have a person in front of me is, so it's not just your body that I'm adjusting. I'm also trying to figure out, what's your life like? What are you going through? What are your stresses? What is causing your body to react in this way and compensate in this way? Because until I don't understand that, I'm literally just pushing buttons, and it's a band-aid effect and off you go. So wow. It's really trying to get to the root cause of the problem to say, oh, you've got this stress going on. Maybe that's causing you to clench your jaw a lot more than you realize. You might be grinding your teeth at night or just clenching at night, and that's why your neck's in a crappy place right now. And no matter how much we try to adjust it, your neck just doesn't want to move because there's something else causing it to just lock down. And so understanding that kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but just that cycle of this causes this and this causes that type of a thing is really, really important to address a person.
So you're talking about the interconnectedness of people's lives and their lifestyles.
Yeah.
Their emotions.
Mm.
All of this.
All of it.
Then translating to pain in the body
mm.
that presents to you as, hey, I've got this pain.
Yeah.
Can you adjust me? That's typically the sort of way people go,
that's
right?
That's exactly it.
But I'm fascinated by even that concept. So we live in probably the most stressful time in humanity.
Yeah.
Apart from our earliest ancestors who just had to fight for survival with from the cavemen. We have plenty of food, we have shelter, we have the basic amenities for life.
We have more than the basics, but yeah.
Well, just a little more, right? But that's my point. Yeah. And crazily, those things, we when I was a child, we talked about addiction.
Mm.
And addiction in my time was, look, be careful, solvent abuse, drug abuse, smoking can kill, all of these kinds of things. Now the addictions are totally
different,
right? Mm. And I find when I talk to people and I'm coaching them, I stand back and say, what is it we want to do? What do we want to talk about? And they give me, kind of like you described, a symptom that they want to fix, or an area of their life they want to fix this. And I kind of take your approach, which is stand back, okay. Okay, yeah, we can definitely explore that.
Mm.
But let's help understand the full picture, what's going on here. And then I get them to do a self-reflect and work through. And quite often, in that process, the light bulb's gone. Oh, okay. Okay, there's a short circuit here.
Yeah.
There's overburning it here. And it comes out somewhere else. So your focus is, okay, so I'll fix it by doing this. So tell me about how stress or unhappiness or emotions play on the body. What are the telltale signals and what do you see?
So basically there's a theory called polyvagal theory, and it's become a bit of a hot word at the moment, but it's been there for ages. It's just understanding it has kind of come to a bit more of a forefront now. And polyvagal theory is looking at your vagus nerve. It's a really important nerve because it allows you to be in rest and repair state in your nervous system. You've got your parasympathetic and your sympathetic nervous system. So without being too technical, basically, like you said with the cavemen, you've got a rest and digest or rest and repair state where there's no perceived danger, there's no animal coming to kill you or anything like that. And then you go into fight and flight. You need to react. You need to be quick. And that's when you know there's something dangerous about to happen to you. And now they've discovered, or they're starting to understand better, that there's a third part to it, and it's the freeze mode. And the freeze mode would be play dead. Just lie down, play dead, so the animal doesn't think that you're alive and functioning and doesn't want to come after you. And with our stresses that we have, so certain things that tip over our nervous system, emotional stresses, physical stresses, and chemical stresses. So obviously pollution, things we eat, things we breathe in, all of that, you know, people live in houses that have damp, mold, all of those things kind of affect our nervous system and our wiring. Then you've also got things like physical. So do you sit at a desk all day? Do you lean when you're driving in your car for hours because that's what you do for commuting? All of those things, just posturally, are you sitting on your phone for hours and scrolling and, you know, just like this? All of those things are physical stresses. Then you've got your emotional stresses. Emotional stresses, we don't realize that we're in a day and age where there's constantly stuff thrown at you. You're in a bit of a rat race. You're dealing with this emotion, dealing with that emotion, dealing with this, dealing with that. It keeps hitting your nervous system. That input hardwires your nervous system to go, ooh, I need to react this way. Ooh, I need to react that way. If you're constantly reacting, you're constantly in that fight or flight mode. If you don't have that downtime to regulate yourself, to go into rest and repair, your health has no place in this whole spectrum because there's no time for it. There's no time for your body to regulate itself and do what it's supposed to do. And then you've got that freeze mode, which is even worse because a lot of us are just functioning in freeze mode at the moment. We just carry on with our day to day without realizing that there's parts of our body that are just shutting down because it's too much. And the brain realizes that and says, okay, I don't have enough energy right now. I need to shut this system down a little bit, just dampen it down. Don't give it the, you know, let's just say digestion, for example. Don't give full power to your digestion. I know you've just eaten, but just it's fine. And so we start eating foods, obviously things are processed as well, so that's your chemical, you know, insult to our bodies. We eat food, but our body doesn't digest it properly. And we think, oh, I've got IBS, because they don't know what else to label it. But it's really because our body isn't capable of going into your rest and repair mode. And so this is where regulating your nervous system and actually adjusting it so it optimizes its function is really important. But people haven't quite piece together that's how chiropractic can help them.
Kushbu, my mind's buzzing with so much there. I don't know where to start. So
I did just jabber on a little bit.
not at all. Let's break it down.
Yeah, sure.
So let's start with the end, first of all. You mentioned our minds are being bombarded with information, with fight or flight. Now, you know, there's this whole battle, I'd say it's a battle going on out there,
yeah,
between people have been brought up in the social media age and those before it. And there's a, that argument is about, well, things are changing, get with the change. And parents always say that about their kids. It's just always the same. It was never like that in our time. That's the headline narrative. But from what I'm hearing, being bombarded by to respond, and it doesn't have to be aggressive. The content doesn't have to be aggressive.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so content that you feel that just appears and your natural instinct is, it's there, you're alert to it, is akin to a fight or flight behavior of our ancestors.
Yeah.
And that, from my, you know, my journey of wellness, you mentioned the vagus nerve. And when I read up about, so I had, you know, long COVID, suffered all sorts of, you know, had to be pumped full of antibiotics and stuff, which killed my gut bacteria. And I'm going, okay, go back to home remedies my mum always talked about. And so I went back to eating from raw foods, cutting out anything processed, you know, a morning routine where my stomach has alkaline, so it's lemon water, warm water, and then some of those basic home treatments. And I started to find the difference. But feeling uneasy, is it IBS? Is it, what is it? Well, nothing's digesting. Then I read about the vagus nerve. So tell the listeners about the vagus nerve, where it sits and how important that is. Comparison to your brain, because it's talked about as a second brain, right?
Yeah. So again, without being too complicated, we've got a highway of nerves in our body. Everything sits at the top as your brain, turns into the brain stem, turns into the spinal cord, and then it branches out to different areas of the body. Brain tells the body what to do and how to respond to all the things that the nerves are actually picking up from our outside. So it's a two-way system. The vagus nerve runs through the center of our body. It comes straight from the brain, so it doesn't go into the spine or anything like that. And the way it distributes, it's kind of like the center of your body, and it's kind of like the, like you said, the main control bit where it's like, am I going to respond to this or am I going to stay calm? And inherently, our body is supposed to just function well. That's how we were designed. And so when we start having all these influences on our body, and that's why everyone's different, because they've had different, you know, different types of upbringings, different types of programming, influence, everything, our body responds in a certain way. And so that vagus nerve is really important because it detects, shit, do I need to, like, do I need to be ready for something that's coming at me, or can I just stay normal? So it's that switch that you're trying to kind of figure out whether it's over-functioning or whether it's not functioning at all. And usually it's that the vagus nerve is switched off. It's just not allowing your body to go back into rest and repair.
Something that, again, follows on from this is, for me, is that getting back to wellness, getting my body condition back to normal again. And you sit there and you go, well, I'm eating well. I'm maybe exercising. A lot of people I speak to who go, right, I've got an exercise regime.
Yeah.
I go to the gym, I eat well, I eat this, that I've been told to eat this. The body doesn't seem to respond in the same way.
Yeah. That you hope it would.
Is that because the vagus system or the body's shutting down the digestive system because of stress on something as benign in their minds as their social media and their response to their emails and social media? Do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely it. It's as simple as, like, you'd be eating your meal, and maybe you're not even doing anything crazy at the time. You're just having a chat with your partner or your kids at the table and you're eating your meal, and then your phone blinks and you think, oh shit, okay, let's just check that, and it's an email from work. I mean, this happens to my husband a lot. That's why I'm using the example. He checks it and he's go, oh. And so then he's on the phone for a little bit and then he'll go back to eating. But in that moment where you've checked that phone, your body has perceived stress and stop that digestion, this is not important right now. And so your body has like this hierarchy of what's really important that I need to deal with. And it's usually the things that are like, you know, work email, this stress. If I don't do this, this is going to happen. And so rest and digest and all of that, that can come later. That's kind of when you wind down. But we don't allow ourselves to wind down. That's the problem. And so that's when the vagus nerve decides, I'm just going to shut down. No one's using me.
So can this build up over a period of time? Because it's not always going to be when you're eating that you get these messages.
No, of course
not. I'm talking about social media as well, not just work.
Yeah.
From my personal experience, yes, I come from an environment where I've always had to, or a lifestyle and everything that goes, I need to check my emails, I need to be on top of something. But even if I've switched that off, as I said, from a personal journey point of view, it seems to be a lot harder to get my body to behave normal, get back to normal in terms of digestion, in terms of pulling out the nutrients. So then I look at ways of boosting that and helping that. So is that something that your body doesn't just react in the moment, but if it's used to responding during the day or the evening with social media, with responding to, somebody just messaged me.
Yeah.
I'm on this group. I better respond back. I better see what it is. Mm. That's what I see when I'm coaching.
Yeah.
And I look at myself and I find myself sometimes going, okay, put it down.
Yeah.
Can that build up over time and still have the same effect, or is it just in the moment?
Yeah, no, in the moment it has a similar effect, but it's like a muscle. You train it, you build strength on it, and then there's a muscle memory to it as well. In a similar way, when we have these habits that we just accumulate over time, those habits are going to create like a muscle memory where our brain recognizes these patterns and it says, okay, yeah, this again. Okay, yeah, this again. This again. And every time we do something that's going to create that vagus nerve to just shut down a little bit, then it's those small things that start to trigger us. And we just don't realize why our body's functioning a certain way anymore. Mm. And it's I guess the best example is of an iceberg. It's a buildup of symptoms. It's a buildup of triggers. It's a buildup of all this stuff that your body's taking on, all these influences, and then you see the tip of the iceberg. You only see the tip of the iceberg, and that's like the 10% of the problem. And that is when we see symptoms. That's when you feel pain. That's when you start saying, oh, my stomach's just not quite right. I'm not digesting my food properly, or, you know, I'm going to the gym, my recovery is not as great, or why do I keep injuring myself? I'm doing all the right things, but why do I, like, I'm going to the gym and all of a sudden my neck goes crook and then I have to not do it for a little while. And so those kind of things are when your body's actually screaming at you. And there's a really lovely saying that if you listen to your body whisper, you won't have to hear it shout. And I think that's great because that explains this, you know, this iceberg so well, that you've got all these whispers that are building up and we ignore. Because our lifestyle is as such, I don't have time for that. I just need to keep going. And so it all builds up to a point where now your body's going, okay, she's not listening anymore. I need to do something about this. And then it starts shouting at you. And that's what a symptom is.
Absolutely love that. Mm. If you don't listen to your body whisper, it'll eventually shout at you.
Yeah.
So you have to listen. Mm. For the vagus nerve, before I move on, something that I learned and I experienced a lot, and it made a lot of sense to me, that the nerve endings in your stomach, in your digestive system, send you messages, signals. So when people say, I had a bad feeling in my stomach, or I had a gut feeling, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. There's science to it.
That's incredible, right? You and might not know why for me, but it's telling me something that I need to...
Our body's reacting. Our body's telling us. It's communicating. And unfortunately, if we stop that communication and we just kind of silence it a little bit, it stops talking to us as well.
Wow.
Until it gets to a point where it's too much. And it's the case with so many things, right? Like with my kids, for example. Mommy, mommy, mommy. Yep, I'm coming, I'm coming, I'm coming. And then there's this outburst. It's the same thing, right? Like you ignore it for a little bit. And then it gets to a point where it's too much and then you've got a meltdown. And it's what our body does as well. And unfortunately, like I said, with our lifestyles, this day and age, it's a rat race that we're in. constantly chasing something. And sometimes I'm like, what are we even chasing? Like, why? What is this? And when you realize that, that's when you can kind of step back and say, I really need to take care of the basics right now. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to go on further.
So given the complexity that we're talking about here, what's your approach when the patient first comes to you? What's your approach to understanding what's going on? And what can they expect on that journey?
So I think a standard, you know, initial consultation type of a thing is for us to really see clinically what's going on with the body. So we'll do like a posture check, range of movement, see how well your body's actually moving, kind of explain why posture is important as well, because I think people think posture is very aesthetic, and it's not. it's very functional. And then we do some muscle tests, neurological tests, orthopedic tests, so a whole bunch of things to really rule out, is there anything nasty going on, or what are we really dealing with here? And once we start doing that, there's conversations as well. And I think that's where the beauty of really understanding a person is. It's not just come in, lay on the table, I do my thing, you go. It's like, I feel like I know all my patients and like what's going on in their lives and who's part of their family and who do they know and this and that. And it's when they come in and they start talking about certain things, just even small things that they mention, like, I've got a stressful job, but I've quit it. And so I'm in a good place now. And I'm, you know, I'm feeling really good. I just wanted to see if there's anything I can do about this knee pain or whatever it is. We start unraveling by obviously looking at the spine, seeing what's going on, but you've mentioned stress to me. So the first thing I'm thinking of, okay, is how well is your body in like the what's it called? Fight or flight mode, freeze mode, or rest and digest mode? Because you could be in freeze mode and you could be functioning and thinking, I'm good, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong. But once we start unwinding
that's
your
like
nervous
denial.
System. Yeah, it's denial, but it's also like, you're actually just not even aware. So many people aren't aware. It's not so much of a, like some people are in denial for sure.
So is it like a numbness? Your body doesn't just give you the signal?
Yeah. Okay. And it's just like, oh, but everything feels fine. But sometimes it may not even be the fact that your body's not giving you the signal. It could be the fact that you're so used to feeling this way that it's your normal.
Wow.
And that's when people start like, you know, when you get adjusted, like I said, you could feel array of things, array of benefits, and it's different to each individual. And like I could have someone come in for, again, headaches that they get. And we're looking at, you know, posturally, are you holding your head like this? Is that causing you to have an anterior pelvic tilt? This, that, and the other. I talk mechanically because I'm trying to explain how their body, their shell, is influencing their nervous system. But once we start unwinding that and the patient comes back and says, I didn't have any period pain this month, or actually the headaches are gone, but also I feel like I can sleep better now. All of those random things that kind of just fall into place, it's not a fluke. It's because your nervous system just wasn't allowing those areas to function well. And so when we switch things back on and when we start getting your body to work at an optimal functioning state, it goes, oh, actually, I'm going to give you a good night's sleep now. I'm going to do this for you now. And that's just what your body's meant to do, but it stopped doing that for a while. And we just became used to it. So we didn't know that that's what's going on.
That's incredible. That, to me, the fact that you, where we started this part of our conversation, the nervous system.
Yeah.
And bringing that back into balance has so many benefits. The fact that you pick up that the body's out of balance, the nervous system's out of balance. But then the benefits that you can retune it, first of all.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking like a car. Okay, excuse me.
Yeah.
I understand cars. So like you have a body's sashi and the kind of components there. I'm thinking skeleton. That's how I can relate to it. Get it back in alignment. Get everything working properly. Okay, right, got that. And then you're going, right, now tune it. Because with the car, even once you've got it back into shape, an MOT, you have to, or a service even.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a service, the clothes we're talking about, right? You don't know anything's wrong until you go there and you go, ah.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, okay, this feels better. Give me better fuel economy now. Okay, it's faster. Mm. It's cleaner. All of those things. But then you, I know, a big proponent of, it's not a one fix, go and break it again, fix again.
Yeah.
You have a different approach to this. And so tell us about that.
So I think a lot of people come in because of pain. Right. And unfortunately, like I said, pain is like that tip of the iceberg. So once the pain goes away, it's not like, okay, your problem's gone away. I've still got 90% of the stuff to deal with. I still need to get your function on point for you to be able to say to me, oh, actually, I can go months and months and months without feeling crappy again. And it's usually people who will come in, the pain's gone, okay, I'm gone too, that will come back again very soon and be like, oh, the pain's back again. And then I have to explain to them that, you know, we just kind of address the tip of the iceberg. You're still floating at that like sea level. And once we get you further down, it's going to take you longer for you to get up to that level again. If we just stay at this level, you're going to keep experiencing this again and again. And just like I said with muscle memory, every time we adjust the spine, I'm putting in an input into your brain to say, this is the right alignment. This is how you stay interference free. So you can imagine a body's been in a misaligned state for God knows how long. I mean, literally.
A long time.
Yeah, literally. You wouldn't even know. You don't know if that was there from your childhood or from, you know, a car crash maybe that you were in, or, you know, when you sprained your ankle and then you started hobbling for like a month or so. All of those things, all of those inputs are going to create like a pattern of misaligned state. When you come in and I adjust you, that's a great input into your body and says, okay, this is how I want to be. It's creating neuroplasticity. Again, another like hot topic. It's creating neuroplasticity into your brain. But the more we do it, the more the brain gets accustomed to it. And it says, no, this is the way I want to be. This is the state that I need to be in. So a lot of people, you know, sometimes struggle to understand, why do I need to come in like on a weekly basis for a little while, or why the frequency basically? And that frequency isn't because I'm necessarily chasing the pain. I obviously want you to feel pain-free and feel better, but it's really getting that function back to its optimal state. And that function comes from that repetitive input to say, this is the way we want you to be. This is the way that we want the spine to function.
See, I'd never understood that, but you said neuroplasticity, and that's something I researched when I first started studying things like NLP, how the mind works and how what we put into our system, how we experience the world is based on our senses.
Yeah.
And we have programming, we have a conscious, subconscious mind.
Mm.
And I'm really passionate about helping people reprogram their behaviors, their habits, and break free. And neuroplasticity, when I read about it over a decade ago, what blew my mind was, up until then, my understanding of how the brain works was, that's what I was taught. That's what the medical schools taught, I believe. This part of your brain does this. This part of your brain does your thinking, your hearing, your, you know, your sight. And if that's damaged, that's gone.
That's gone, yeah.
But neuroplasticity, that, you know, credible research that I believe was done in Canada, the hospital there, talked about how paralyzed patients who had spinal damage were able to visualize an action. So their hands moving, their limbs moving, an action, and it could be even speech. And even despite that part of their brain being damaged, gone. They had the scans to prove that part of the brain was gone, damaged. Their brain would then, the body is that smart, the nervous system is that smart, to go, sure, well, we'll program a different part of the brain to do that.
Yeah.
And that just blew my mind, because I'm thinking, if you can physically get your body to do something like that, your brain to do that, then everything else is easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something from our culture, spiritual part, is there's a term where we visualize being our soul, visualize being at the feet of the creator, of our guru or whoever you pray to. And, you know, I used to remember the visualization process that you detach from the world. It's just you, just your soul, your energy. And then you offer that devotion and you connect and you feel one with that. And you take that into your day. And I said, okay, if there's something in front of me, say if I'm at a place of worship, in front of a spiritually realized soul, a guru, and physically being there, I got it.
Yeah.
But apparently the body doesn't differentiate between the physical world and the world inside your mind.
Yeah.
So you can actually reap the benefits, the highs, the change in your chemical makeup in your body, in your brain, by visualizing it.
Yeah.
And so, and lastly on this, to create a new habit, a new pathway, you have to repeat it a certain number of times.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
Yeah.
Whether you're learning a new skill, memorizing something, driving a car, or in your case, whether you're adjusting somebody's neurosystem through chiropractic medicine, you are creating new pathways, which once you keep on that program of repeat, keep doing this, it retunes.
Yeah.
And it brings it back to that feeling of balance and harmony, which we're always designed to do.
Yeah.
So that's incredibly powerful for me. And I want everybody who's listening to take that away. Take, you know, if you take nothing else away, wow, this is amazing. You can reprogram your body, your nervous system, to get back into harmony. And the benefits you'll see is from everything, from your physical, you know, joints, body, skeleton, but to your digestive system, the way you feel, all of that.
Everything, yeah.
Now, you said something along that about something could have been a pattern from childhood. And I want to talk about that because I started this podcast saying, for me, chiropractic intervention happens whether you, when you have a sports injury or, you know, been working a long time, long hours. But it's not like that, is it?
No.
So you do a lot of intervention from the earliest
stages
of life.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
So it, I think the best way to, again, understand it is the influences that we have, the threats that we have, or the perceived threats, or just any experience that we experience in our life, however it makes us feel, it feels in our nervous system. Our nervous system, like if I were to see someone angry and coming at me, I'd be like this, I would tighten up. If someone was super happy and smiled, like just walking past me, I'd be like, oh, that was nice. And so our body reacts. Children react the same way. And babies react the same way. And our chemistry and our neurobiology and everything reacts to our environment. There's a thing called epigenetics as well, which basically says that our environment influences our DNA. Like that's huge. The fact that it can influence our DNA, and we're basing medicine and everything on the fact that there's so much going on with the DNA, and this is the blueprint that you're given, and this is just how your body's going to react because of that blueprint. But there's a thing called epigenetics, which means that our environment can influence the way that our DNA functions.
Environment meaning?
Everything around us. Everything that we experience around us.
So, we're not just talking about, you know, pollution or things like that.
No. Sorry. Yeah. Environment meaning what kind of household are you in? How did you grow up? Who were the people around you? Who were your friends? What kind of work environment do you have? All of those things. Were you in a loving family or did you have parents fighting all the time? All of those things program the way that our DNA actually expresses itself. So the environment influences that. So going back to childhood then, it's obviously there's that that's in place. Then you've also got milestones. When a baby is born, there's only certain milestones that it inherently has. So one of the really cool milestones is as soon as they're born, a baby has a crawling reflex. It can crawl. So if you were to put the baby on the mum's stomach as soon as it was born, you could see a baby crawl up to the mum to go and drink its milk because it inherently knows to survive, I need to find my milk. I can smell it. I will move to be able to get it. So those reflexes are there. But then as we grow, those reflexes dampen down. And then we have to have other reflexes that come in. So our nervous system is really important, especially for its function, so that we can express the best way and develop the best way. There's certain milestones that we need to reach as well, like being able to sit, being able to crawl. All of those things, if they're not done well, and I mean well in the sense of as best as possible and optimally, then that hinders the way our nervous system functions and how it programs and how it kind of expresses itself. So an example would be, you know, my son. He had chiropractic care from when he was 2 weeks old. So he was getting adjusted, everything was going well, but I could notice that he wasn't crawling correctly. And when he was crawling, he was hiking up one leg and straightening the other leg. He was quick. And so everyone was like, oh, he's crawling so quickly. And I was like, but that's not important. The quickness is not important. The way that it's doing it and the symmetricalness of it is important. And also there was a fact that he didn't want to roll as much. And again, I was like, he's been getting adjusted and things like that. What's going on?
So you sent him to another professional in your
circle? Oh, yeah,
circle.
Of course. Yeah, I didn't want to be the one that wore that hat as well. So
sure.
I had a friend of mine who's a great chiropractor. She specializes in pediatrics as well. And so she was adjusting him and he was functioning so well, so, so well neurologically. And I could tell because I'm a professional. But there was a few things that were still holding him back a little bit. And he had a tongue tie. We just didn't realize it until later on. Once a tongue tie was
What's a tongue tie before we move on?
Fine. A tongue tie is basically underneath your tongue, there's a little bit called the frenulum. And that pulls your tongue down or allows your tongue to go up and function the way
so
it should.
So that little skin type of thing at the center of your tongue, underneath your tongue. Okay, that's a tongue tie.
So being able to understand that the body, and it's not just about chiropractic, it's about understanding what interferences the body could have for it to be able to express at its best. Because of this tongue tie, he had a little bit of a head preference. And the head preference we deal with as a chiropractor, and that head preference can come from within the womb, the way that they're constrained inside there for so long, or if they haven't had enough space to move around because the mum's pelvis was a certain way, etc. So basically, the way that the tongue tie was influencing him was it wasn't allowing him to symmetrically move as well as he should. So the rolling over wasn't working as well for him. The crawling again wasn't working as well. He was hitting all those milestones in time, but there was something that was kind of restricting him a little bit. And in that journey, obviously, being a chiropractor, I realized something's not quite right. When we addressed the tongue tie, everything started falling into place. So we were lucky that we understood that that was the case. It's not always a tongue tie that's going to be causing that kind of a problem or, you know, interference in their nervous system. But kids, when they're born, it's a bit of a, I mean, I don't know if you saw the birth of your kids itself.
Yeah, I did.
When they actually bring the baby out, they're not as gentle as you would imagine. It's very much
putting it mildly,
get the baby out type of a situation.
Yeah.
And in that, they talk when they come out. And that's naturally meant to happen. But when they're talking and then they're pulled a bit further.
Talking meaning twisting them as they come out.
Twisting, yeah. They can get a little bit of a nick in their neck. And mm-hmm. that seems very mild, but that can cause their body to just want to stay to one side a little bit. You can get a bit of a torticollis or a KISS syndrome. And all of those things means that there's a bit of a head preference then. And so when there's a head preference, the baby flattens their head on one side. Parents start to worry because it's, oh, I've got a flat head kid. Like aesthetically, that doesn't look great. But functionally, there's a bigger problem there because you're actually making the nervous system function in one way and not in a symmetrical way. So all of those kind of things play a huge, huge role from the start. Then the kid starts to walk or cruise along the sofa and then fall on their bum. That impact is enough to, again, cause interferences in their nervous system. Or when people think that it's cool to hold onto a kid's arms, pull on the shoulders and get them to walk. Again, that's not great for their shoulders either. And that neurological interference causes issues
as well.
You're
kidding me. That's not good for them.
No, not at all. Ooh. And even things like containers. People put their kids, and obviously in this day and age, you might not have the time to be able to attend to your kid all the time, but I'll put them in a bouncer or a walker or, you know, one of those jolly jumpers where they bounce up and down in a doorway. All of those things are inhibiting the baby from being able to do what it's meant to do, which is freely move.
So to both of my kids,
listening,
I'm really sorry. I put you in bouncers and jumps, and I thought it was really cute, and I thought you were enjoying it.
Yeah, but people didn't know about it. And now we're getting educated that, you know, putting babies into carriers or anything that's going to hinder their movement is actually not allowing them to express those neurological pathways, that neuroplasticity that's so important. In the first 5 years, they're literally creating neurons like crazy. I can't even remember the stats right now, but there's an immense amount of neurons being created. When you inhibit the kid to be able to move, you're inhibiting that neurological stimulation. So put them on the floor, on a mat, let them roll, let them do whatever. Be there next to them for a little bit. Go away, do what you need to. They're safe on the floor. They can't fall. They're not going to go anywhere, right? But it's those kind of things where parents don't realize that obviously trying to stimulate their nervous system to grow is important, and those are the things that we can do. But when we start putting them into containers, doing things that aren't quite great for them, and we don't realize it, obviously it's very innocent, that can start hindering their nervous system from that point onwards. And even like, it's so important. People think, oh, it's just a baby, it won't really know. But if parents are stressed out and tired, newborn babies' parents are always that way. If they're fighting in front of their kids as well, and they think, oh, my kid's not going to understand, it's fine. They're taking on that energy. They're taking everything on. That's their environment that they're growing up in. And then those are the influences that have already started programming their nervous system to behave in a certain way.
So, as I said, I'm one of those parents who had their kids in these cutesy bouncers and pouches and everything. Mm. And in the world that we live in, where quite often both parents are busy having to multitask and manage around, what I think I'm hearing is, okay, ideally you don't want to be doing this.
Yeah.
But the hope for me is, just like when you're an adult, even for young children, a chiropractic doctor seeing them, who's a specialist in pediatrics, a regular sort of visit to that, just like you program in regular visits to the dentist, I guess, is just continue to get that tuning done to give that child the best neurological development pathway for their journey. And starting at that age, I can just imagine the compound effect of getting it right and keeping it right early on.
Mm.
So for busy mums and dads out there, those with young children, those planning kids, I'd certainly recommend finding somebody like Khushbu. You know, I know Khushbu, you're based in
Notting Hill,
yeah. London. So I'll put a link to your practice, Chiropractic Alchemy, on the description for the channel. But so from the youngest age all the way through life, we talked about the vagus nerve. We talked about the parasympathetic
and sympathetic
nervous systems. So talk us through, I mean, I'm curious, we've got this spine here.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious, okay, the only time I've ever seen a spine before that is when people talk about slip discs and, okay, this is where it's gone now. But talk us through, the different sections of the spine and where they relate to?
Yeah, fine. So obviously, like I said, the brain controls everything. So the brain sits up top there. And then it comes down into a brain stem, so right at the base of your skull where the neck kind of starts. And the brain stem controls like your heart, your sleep, all the, like the really important regulations are up there, because obviously it's heavily protected by your skull.
It affects your sleep?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I need to come and see you again. Yeah. Okay, so tell me how it affects your sleep.
It's basically regulatory systems. So basically the input that the brain has in that area, whether it's, very simply put, high strung, it's not going to be able to regulate as well as it should. If there's pressure on it, it's not going to be able to regulate as well as it should. When there's no pressure or no interference, it's just going to work the way it should. So it's, again, it's such a complicated system, and it's not really about if I adjust there, you're going to sleep better. Mm-hmm. Or if I adjust there, your ovaries are going to function better. It's not like that. Like I said, the body is a whole. Once we start influencing it so that it functions at its best, literally my job is to figure out where these misalignments are, where these interferences are, put the input in, put the intent in as well. I think that's quite important. And then your body does the magic, quite literally does the magic. It's you that does it, not me. I'm like a secondary person in this whole thing. And so the nerves that come out when they start firing, like let's just say from T1 to T4, which is the top of the back, those nerves house areas for your digestion, like your stomach and things like that. When we have a very stressful job, let's say a desk job, we're like this. When we are on our phones or our laptops all day, we're like this. We also cut off the open area here, which is where, again, there's a huge area of nerve plexus.
Under the diaphragm.
Yeah, and that's also where our vagus nerve comes out. Uh-huh. So all of that, like, let's just say we're like this all day.
Leaning forward.
This area starts to get very tight because it's trying to pull your head back to where it should be. And that's a heavy head. It's like a tempin bowling ball. So when it's trying to pull, all of this area starts to get blocked up. You start feeling a bit stiff. And, you know, we do kind of try to wriggle ourselves out of it. But once that area is blocked, the nerves don't fire to the digestive system as they should. Again, going back into this whole, why do I have like IBS symptoms? Why do I get bloated? It's not because that's what's happening. It's because you're not neurologically able to stimulate your body to do what it's supposed to. So again, it's a really complicated question you've asked. There's nerves that go to different areas, like C2, the top of your neck, goes to your sinuses. But just because I adjust that area doesn't mean your sinuses are going to clear. It could be that we need to actually do more work with your cranial bones, which is the bones in your skull, to free that area to move better. We might need to do work with your jaw to actually get the muscles that are tightening in this area to relax so that your sinuses can function better. So it's not like a switch this on, this will happen. It's switch these things on and God knows what's going to happen. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, depending on what you've abused your body with up until
exactly,
then, right?
That exactly.
Date. You mentioned cranial adjustment, and I found that fascinating because on one of the sessions we had, I hadn't mentioned anything about my jaw. And then you went,
But you mentioned stress.
Yeah. And I went, okay. And then I remember you putting your hand, your thumb inside my cheek. And then pressing. Does that hurt? But when you released it, I genuinely felt different. So I think this whole journey of wellness for me in terms of chiropractic intervention has been such an eye-opener. And I've experienced it. So it's not just theory for me. I'm kind of going, I'm joining the dots together. It's my way.
Yeah.
I sit there and go, light bulb. And that's why I wanted to share it. So in terms of the conversation so far, are there any, you know, what are the topical areas today in the world of chiropractic? What are people talking about? Where's the research going?
I think the research is, it's still quite in its, you know, new stages, because obviously funding is a big thing as well. there's a lot to actually stress on the nervous system, because traditionally people have just said that it's adjustments of misaligned areas, and it's trying to align things so that it works better or you feel less pain because there's less pressure on that joint. It's really like the most simplified way of saying that we adjust the spine. In actual fact, the neurology behind it, there's like Heidi Hevick-Tyler, she's got research coming out about so many things with neurology in terms of how the pelvic floor starts functioning all of a sudden better because you've been adjusted. Or, you know, the way that our nervous system functions because you're being programmed with these adjustments to think better, to work better, and to know better. And so there's a lot of research that still needs to be done, unfortunately, but again, it's all coming out now with the polyvagal theory. And that's not chiropractic research. That's research in general with people who are in the behavioral field, you know, psychologists and things like that. They understand and appreciate now as well that the polyvagal theory is something really big, because once you understand that, you understand how their nervous system is hardwired. And once you understand that, it's better, you're better able to approach the person and help them out. So in the world of science, there's a lot going on in terms of the importance and the hierarchy of certain systems. And the nervous system is really high up there. I don't want to say it's the top, but it's really, really high up there. And so understanding what chiropractic actually does for the body and then marrying that research together allows people to understand how important chiropractic care actually is.
Which brings me nicely to where you are on your journey, your personal journey. We met a few months back where we were talking about, okay, what you want to do going forward, where you are in chiropractic alchemy. You're a business owner, a mum of two, somebody who's moved continents, but effectively the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
with a busy life like everybody else, a partner who's got a busy job in the city. So juggling all of that. So tell us where you are and what this journey has been like for you, and where do you want to take this?
I feel like the journey has been the biggest journey of my life, not going to lie. It's been an eye-opener working with you in terms of it's things that I knew, things that I tell my patients to do for themselves as well, but I always found excuses for myself. And being a mum taking care of two kids, I think in our first conversation that we had, we spent 2 hours talking, and I remember 15 minutes of it was talking about business and 1 hour 45 was talking about how I needed to take care of myself first. And I found that really hard because, again, I had kept programming myself over the years with having kids that I need to put them first. I need to do this first. I need to do that first. Okay, your PT can, okay, we won't be able to make it this week, or, you know, 2 weeks time, fine, or whatever. And it just kept getting pushed back. And I found that, you know, taking on a new business, taking on school assessments as well. I've got a kid who was doing 4+ assessments. All of that was new to me. Everything was so new and so much all of a sudden compared to what Nini was used to in life. And I think the main thing that we realized after analyzing all the things that I was doing with life in general was that my own wellness was lacking. And obviously, being a wellness practitioner myself in terms of, you know, talking to people about their wellness and helping them on their journey, it's really important that I'm, you know, talking the talk and walking the walk as well. And basically, it came down to I just wasn't prioritizing myself. And allowing myself to do that, allowing myself to, and again, you said something which I found so strange. You were like, okay, at the end of this, you know, once we set these goals, how are you going to feel? And I was like, I don't know. That's such a weird question. And you were, you know, gently trying to ask me these questions, and I was like, I'll feel stronger. And I couldn't, I didn't have a, not a tangible, but like, I didn't have an answer to it. And it's so strange because I had never really thought about what my goals were for my own wellness. I hadn't put something out there yet. And working with you, obviously putting it in paper, writing it down, taking notes on it, writing like a Dear Diary entry and actually saying to myself that this is how I'm going to feel, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to be amazing, and this is going to be the best journey that I'm going to be on, it started manifesting. And it was crazy how it was manifesting, like snowball effect type of a thing. And I was really surprised because I genuinely thought, oh, this is going to take much longer than I expect and much longer than you're telling me that we could make it work and all of that. But I remember at, you know, in that conversation where we spoke about myself and my wellness.
To be clear for the listeners, the conversation initially was, so, yeah, I've run my own business and I want some help and I'm not sure how
can I tweak this business?
How can I tweak this? Yeah. And he's like you said, it was like, okay, yeah, sure. Mm. But kind of like you approach your practice, that's all I do as a coach.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, stand back. Okay, yeah. Good. Now tell me the whole picture.
Yeah.
And yeah, sorry, I interrupted there. So
no, it's fine. And I remember, I mean, I don't even know why I cried, but I started crying when I said to you that my most important thing was I wanted to be present for my kids. I've situated my lifestyle so that I'm there to drop them, pick them up, be there with them for the whole afternoon, which I know is a big blessing. Not everyone has the ability to do that. But I felt like I wasn't even taking advantage of that. I felt like I was just grumpy and tired and just like, oh my God, can't wait for you guys to go to bed. And I didn't want to be that mom. And I think the main thing was when I was telling you this, I just started tearing up because I realized that forget about the business, forget about this, that, and the other. If I wasn't taking care of my own wellness, I didn't have enough to give to my own kids. And so that was the biggest journey that I've been on, because my goal was to be there for my kids, to be the best that I could for my kids and just give them kind of the childhood that I had, where I had so many people giving them love and they have so many people giving them love, but we live by ourselves. So it's always going to be me giving that extra bit of love for them. And for me to take care of myself first and allow myself to take care of myself first was a big thing, because when I started doing that and I started noticing that I started dancing with my kids out of nowhere, my kids would look at me and be like, what is going on? And they loved it. But at the same time, it was like, oh,
where did you come from?
Yeah. And I remembered that old Nini again. And it was really strange because I loved that old Nini. I loved what I had. And, you know, certain part of it got lost a little bit because responsibilities come in life and things change. And it's for a good reason, obviously. But I was able to bring that part of me back again so that my kids could experience the same thing. And that was, I think, the best gift ever. Like I couldn't ask for anything else, business, life, anything else, except for the ability to be there for my kids in the way that I have able to become now.
It just makes me warm and fuzzy inside just listening to you and watching you grow like this.
Mm.
But it, you know, people like myself, like you, we all need an external mirror.
Mm.
I'm a coach, I'm a mentor, but I need to have people where I can just go, hold the mirror up to me, safe space. And your reflections, because like you said, I'm not doing anything.
Mm.
I'm just being there to listen and reflect and help you. I'll point the torch somewhere and help you kind of join the dots together.
Yeah.
The journaling, it's something that people talk about a lot.
Mm.
But the power of writing something down.
Oh my God, it's insane.
Freeform.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, finding your reason why.
Yeah.
Everybody has a reason why, ultimately. And they have maybe have multiple reasons why. But then the hierarchy of that. And, okay, you want to be there for your kids. You want to be the best mom. You want to do it. Okay, but that light bulb moment, which I saw when you say you started tearing up, was, if you don't look after yourself, if you can't show yourself the same compassion that you'd show someone you care for,
yeah,
then you're not giving yourself fully, because there's a price to pay. And that what you saw as a trade-off, or I'm sacrificing time that I've dedicated to look after, to care for, when you sort of traded off, and I remember you spoke to your husband, Sandeep, about this.
Mm.
And the little tweaks where you give yourself some quality time made you lift your game, feel better, and everybody wins, right?
Yeah.
But that's a journey. So I'm super proud of you.
Well, thank you, because it was your insight, your ability to hone down on all of these things and bring that out of me. Obviously, you didn't tell me what to do. You just held up that mirror. But again, my husband could have told me very similar things and I would have been like, okay, cool. Like, chill. Like, I'm struggling here. I don't want to hear this right now. And it was really important that it came from someone that I could trust, and also that just had that compassion to give as well. Because I think that's the other thing, is that sometimes we look for the answers, but we're harsh on ourselves. And I remember you telling me to speak to myself in a much kinder way. And I mean, I found it really hard to do initially, and I had to really think about it when I was doing it. But finally, it started to come out, and I'm a lot more forgiving to myself if something's not going right, or, you know, there's more stresses in life than what I'm used to, etc. But again, that all comes from you sharing that wisdom that you've got to be able to implement that into my life. Because if I didn't have that, again, it would just be very, very hard to be kind to myself and to, again, just find that purpose and really work towards that purpose. Because now when I go to the gym and I have to push those last reps, and I'm struggling, like I'm really struggling, I think of my purpose. I think of who I'm doing it for, because I'm doing it for myself, of course. But my purpose is because if I do this last rep well, I'm going to be stronger, I'm going to be fitter, and I'm going to be there for my kids. And that's what's more important to me. So again, I wouldn't have thought of that before. But the way that you brought that out of me allows me to push myself, push those boundaries a little bit, so I can reach that goal much better than what I was doing before.
That's so lovely to hear. And it's something that I want people to understand, that this is, we're not rocket scientists.
No.
But with the experience and the insights we have, we try and go, okay, so sometimes life can be really simple if you allow it to be.
Yeah.
And I remember, I know that I speak to a lot of people who are in a similar situation. That everybody's, you know, sometimes we say we're time poor, cash rich.
Mm.
Some people are in neither position, bless them. But then there becomes tension in terms of who's doing what. Partners start to disagree.
Mm.
There's tensions, and everybody's trying their best to do the right thing. And sometimes it's okay to say, well, I'm at breaking point.
Yeah.
And how has the dynamic at home changed? Because I remember even when we first spoke, no, everybody has this role, they have this role, this is the role everybody has. And then how do you go, okay, but I need to spend more time on myself? And I remember that conversation, said, look, open it up, it's for everybody's benefit.
Yeah.
How's that dynamic at home changed?
It's changed massively, because it's not even on my husband's front, it's on my front, because it was me that was controlling it and just not letting go. And I remember at the start of our journey with coaching, you said, okay, we're going to meet on Fridays. And it was Easter weekend, and I had already planned that I was going to potty train my younger one. And I said, oh, it's Easter weekend, so surely you'll be spending time with family, and, you know, we won't do this weekend. And you were like, no, we've made a commitment to this. I'll be there. And I was like, okay, but I have potty training to do this weekend. I've got like 4 days to be able to do this in, so it's really important. And you're like, that's okay, Sandeep's there. And in the back of my head, I was like, sure. And then I remember you said, let him do it. You can just tell him what he needs to do, or, you know, he can do his own version as well. again, panicking, going, his own version? I don't really know if that's going to go down well. This is really important psychologically. How is this, like, the first part of potty training going to go? And I remember I was held accountable by you, basically. And so otherwise I wouldn't have taken the step, I know for a fact. And so I was like, okay, I told my husband that I have coaching in the morning and I have PT before that. So I was away for the first 4 hours of potty training. Obviously there was a lot of accidents and a lot of cleaning up to do. And I remember internally, I was just thinking, oh my God, I've left them. I've left them alone. And I've left my husband to deal with this. And I was panicking for him, but I was like, because I was like, he's not going to be able to deal with this well. And I remember you said to me, you said, you know, I potty train my kids. And I look back on it now and I'm so grateful that I did. And I was like, okay. And you said as well, you said, you know what, it's the chaos that obviously brings out a lot of joy as well. And don't rob your husband of being able to do that for his kids. And I realized in that moment that there were so many things we were doing wrong. And one of them was me having this control over, okay, I'm the one that's going to deal with this. So I will do it. And no one else is going to help me. I'm going to do it. And then struggling by the fact that I'm the only one doing it as well. And then the other thing was that we had inherently put in this rule, I don't know when and how, and it wasn't said, but it was at some point, that because my husband works the crazy hours that he does, he spends time with the kids in the morning for about 45 minutes. So, you know, he'll help them get showered, brush their teeth, breakfast, read a book, do puja with them, all of those kind of things. He'll really try and he'll get to work in time. But the evenings, he's not there because when he comes home, the kids are already asleep. So again, he's just got the weekend with them. So for me, it was really important. On the weekends, we do everything together, no matter what. I don't go off on my own doing my own thing. You don't go off on your own doing your own thing. We are doing this as a family. We're spending time together. And he understood that as well. He understood the importance of it. But somewhere along the lines, we lost ourselves in that. And, you know, I wouldn't prioritize my own wellness and he wouldn't either because we had to be at home with the kids. And on this day where I just stepped away for 4 hours, I went and did PT, I did coaching, I came back and I was on a high. I felt great and I was like, okay, my turn now. You go chill. You do whatever you want to. I'll be with the kids. And it was just such a different approach to what we had been doing. But my husband started taking advantage of that as well. I started taking advantage of that. And we're both so much happier because now he's playing football more often, which was life for him. And, you know, he'll go play paddle with some of his friends whenever the opportunity comes up. And I go socialize, I go do random things when I can as well. And it just means we're happier people to be able to give to the people we love. And again, that was such a huge, huge thing for me to realize, which I wouldn't have realized unless I did the coaching with you, because I was so hell-bent on, I'm going to do this all by myself. And that was where my downfall was. And I didn't realize that that was causing my wellness to go downhill, my relationship to inherently go downhill, because my husband and I were both just annoyed at each other constantly that I don't get time to do my own thing. You don't get time to do your own thing, but I don't get time to do my own thing. And so it ended up being such a life-changing is the right word, life-changing, you know, moment where we realized, actually, let's just give ourselves the grace to go and do whatever we need to for ourselves so we can come back and be the best version we can be of ourselves for each other. And the kids benefit from that. We both benefit from that. So it's just a win-win.
Kushpa Patel, I don't know what to say. We started this podcast talking about your journey from childhood, whether, you know, you're a happy-go-lucky kid who didn't quite know what they wanted to do, but was surrounded by love, a free spirit. And there came a moment in life where your purpose, your channel, because you're always about wellness, but wellness in a holistic, so wider way, rather than let's fix it with medication.
Yeah.
And when you found this journey of pursuing chiropractic professional as a doctor now, I mean, a doctor, Ninny, that little child is a doctor. I'd love to know what your dad thinks of that.
He's really proud. He's really proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprised?
Very surprised, actually. He just recently came and stayed with us for a month. And the amount of times he told me that he was so proud and he was so surprised, like pleasantly surprised. He goes, "You do so much." And I can't believe this is my Nini. And I was like, "I know, it's not Nini anymore."
It's Dr. Fishburne, right?
But it was really nice because I think I didn't realize it, but there were certain people in my life that I wanted to prove myself to. Not that I had to, but I just wanted them to know that I made it. Not that I have made it, but, you know, I'm making it. I'm doing something and I'm not that same Nini, or, you know, you can take me a little bit more seriously type of a thing. And that was my husband and that was my dad and my kids. Because I want my kids to see that I'm more than just mummy. I want my husband to know that I'm more than just his wife. And I want my dad to know that I'm more than just his daughter.
Kushbu, you're knocking it out of the park on all fronts, as you kind of wrapped up in such a beautiful way. By you basically taking on your own advice.
Yeah.
Which is, we all have to think of our wellness first.
Mm.
And sharing that it starts from the youngest age.
Mm.
You bringing your compassion, your empathy to every person in front of you has its own energy. And the fact that you've taken control of your wellness and the knock-on effects, like you said, I don't quite know when I'm speaking to somebody what the effect will be, but like a little bit like you, I go, okay, I can see this.
Mm.
But it's down to you
ultimately
to take it on and let the magic happen.
Mm.
Dare to dream. Yeah. I've heard that a few times, but you are somebody who can light up a room with your energy. The insights you've shared today, I hope that people, young mothers, from young mothers, because it's never too early.
Yeah.
I never knew that. You know, I remember the times when we had kids and they were young and we did all the wrong things. Now that I know, hope we can make up for that, guys. But, you know, start early.
Mm.
Think of your health as your wealth. Mm. And chiropractic alchemy.
Mm.
And now I understand alchemy a bit better.
Yeah.
Because it's not straightforward, right? It's not just about this or just that. It's that magic mix of perception, of understanding, of science, of neurology, starting with that nervous system that's tuning it back into balance. Doing that consistently, I've understood that much better today, by the way.
Yeah.
That is like neuroplasticity. You know, you have to keep this routine going, even if the symptoms have gone on the surface, to embed them and train your brain and your body to work a different way again, a more healthy way, is why people need to come regularly, wherever they find their specialist that they can connect with.
Yeah.
You know, you've always shared with me, look, sometimes, like I talk about, the chemistry has to be right. You have to feel right with the practitioner.
Yeah, for sure.
But for everybody out there, I would urge them to take note of the importance of this, to maybe reach out to you if they've got any questions.
Feel free.
I'll share your links to your connections, your data, your details on Instagram and LinkedIn. But you've really shared some real nuggets which I think will change lives. And I mean that.
I hope so.
It will. This podcast goes out across the world, and I'm fortunate that it has a wide reach. But that reach for me has always been about shining the spotlight on real people with real insights, sharing their real stories. And I really appreciate you doing that for us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.